have a seat. And if you could tell us who you are and where you're from.
Mr. Mayor, my name is Shelley Campbell. I am a trauma nurse at Legacy Emmanuel Hospital. I'm coordinator of outreach and professional education.
And you do a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, my name is Matthew Goodman. I'm with the Multnomah District Attorney's Office, and currently I'm the DUI deputy.
Great. Thanks. You do great work, too.
Thank you.
Not enough people, but.
Mr. Mayor, I'm Tom Parker. I'm the communications director for Oregon Partnership. We fight substance abuse and suicide.
Great. And you have a fantastic voice.
You would think that after talking to you so many times on the radio, I might have developed some skills.
You have surpassed our expectations. I'm very pleased to read the following proclamation as an important reminder about public safety as we head into the holiday, further into the holiday season and first of the year. Whereas nearly 3,500 DUII arrests are made each year in Multnomah County, and whereas crashes involving impaired drivers are more severe than crashes with unimpaired drivers, and resulted in 22 fatalities in the city of Portland between January 1st, 2009 and November 1st, 2010. Just shy of a year, 22 fatalities. Whereas most drivers arrested for DUII in Portland had a blood alcohol content that is double the legal limit. And whereas the majority of people fatally injured in an alcohol-involved crash had not been drinking, and whereas the destruction of lives and personal property can be drastically reduced through a combination of effective laws, community programs that integrate and coordinate the enforcement, prosecution, adjudication, treatment, and education components of the driving under the influence of intoxicant system, the changes in societal attitudes towards drinking and driving. Whereas by working together toward a common goal of reducing the incidence of drinking and driving, and therefore fewer alcohol and drug-related fatal and injury crashes, we will enjoy a safer transportation system for walkers, bicyclists, and auto drivers. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim December 25th through December 31st to be Driving Under the Influence Awareness Week in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this week. What message was maybe starting with you, nurse? What message would you like to, or personal experience would you like to share with viewers?
Well, obviously, at the hospital, we get to see the result of what happens when impaired drivers hit the road and end up causing a crash. The majority of crashes that occur, especially during the holiday season, are by impaired drivers, and not just slightly impaired, they're significantly impaired. And we can talk about the cost. 22 lives lost, and for each one of those lives, they estimate well over $1 million cost for the life lost. But I don't think it is in terms of money that I see the biggest import. It's the impact on the families and the lives of the people who are not just losing their lives, but how it devastates the families and the communities around them. And it isn't also just the loss of life in terms of that person gone, but those that are left impaired with these crashes. And the majority of people we see, almost three-fourths of the people we see in the trauma center, are there with injuries they acquire from doing something impaired. It's beyond significant.
Thank you. And Mr. Goodman, what kind of penalties will someone face if they are caught drunk driving or if they've been in a their cause of a crash related to drunk driving?
Well, it would depend on whether this is their first-time offense. If it is a first-time offender, they might be eligible for the diversion program, at which point they enter a plea of guilty, and then sentencing is set over for a year. During that year-long period, they'll have to go through treatment, attend a victim's impact panel, which most people come out saying is the most effective part of their treatment program, to see the effects and to see what the consequences of those decisions are. For a first-time offender who's convicted, there's typically a three-year enhanced bench probation, which is generally treatment, Second-time convictions also carry 3 years of enhanced bench probation. At that point, you're looking anywhere between 15 and 45 days of jail. And now just recently with the new measure, your third DUI in 10 years is a felony, and there's a statutory 90-day minimum sentence.
Thank you. And Mr. Parker, Oregon Partnership maybe isn't as well known as it should be given the importance of the services that helps deliver. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how its work relates to the proclamation today?
Sure. Oregon Partnership, and the main reason we're here is to fight substance abuse and suicide. And the substances include alcohol and prescription drugs, marijuana. We've actually seen this giant rise in prescription drug abuse. It is an epidemic. And I think it's too easy in this climate for everybody to focus in on drunk driving, but we're talking about driving under the influence of intoxicants here. And if anybody in this room can think about, I'm sure nobody here ever experimented with marijuana, but if you could imagine somebody driving a vehicle or a triple trailer under the influence of any variety of substances, alcohol, prescription drugs, marijuana, anything, it's a scary concept. And one of the things we do at Oregon Partnership is we deal with about 40,000 phone calls a year regarding primarily different substances, prescription drugs now being number two right behind alcohol and ahead of marijuana. And the tragedy is clear. We also talk about social norming, how important it is for parents to talk to their kids about, you know, the drinking and driving should never be an option. Everybody, we use the expression all the time that driving is a privilege. It's not a right. But it also gives you a sense of freedom, but it gives you an enormous responsibility we all have to bear. And I, with Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Leonard, with their background having to do with EMT work or with the nursing profession, you know that these things affect, you know, it's motor impairment, it's motor coordination, impulse control, and judgment, all being affected by these. So we really want to bring people awareness of the fact that this is a very serious matter, and I'd love to have people get even ratchet up their concern about taking part of anything, including over the counter prescription drugs and getting behind the wheel. It is dangerous.
Could you maybe just elaborate on what are some of the prescription drugs that are the most prevalent?
Well, the ones that we're seeing big problems with now, Commissioner Saltzman, is, you know, we're seeing things with the so-called the opioids, talking about oxycodone and hydrocodone, as they're known, as Vicodin or OxyContin or Percocet. Things that the average person probably, each one of you probably has several of them in your home. That you had maybe from a previous surgery or procedure that really kind of need to be disposed of. But it's amazing. We were just talking before we came in. A person would think, for some reason, they think nothing about taking a prescription medication, maybe having a drink afterwards, because they took it just like they would a vitamin. And it's a dangerous combination. And then there's an epidemic going on with people abusing these, getting into your home and getting their hands on it. The first thing they do is say, Commissioner Fritz, good to see you. Can I use your restroom? And goes into the medicine chest and avails themselves of any extra prescription meds you have. You don't expect it, but that's what's happening. Matter of fact, we're finding number one place kids find prescription drugs, medicines to abuse are in their parents' and grandparents' medicine chests. It's a big problem, and when it relates to driving, it's huge.
Thank you.
And one more thing. We talk about the little prescription thing that says, you know, do not operate heavy machinery on it when it says, you know, they're not talking about a John Deere tractor here. They're talking about your minivan. They're talking about your car, your motorcycle. That is heavy machinery. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. All right. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Can you please begin with communications item number 1584.
Request of Michelle Bart, Soroptimist International Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking, to address council regarding the third annual Northwest Conference.
Ms. Bart, hi. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Michelle Bart. I'm with Soroptimist International Northwestern Region. I'm the Public Awareness Chair for our entire region. We represent Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. So we serve five states. This epidemic I'm here to speak to you about today on human trafficking, unfortunately, is everywhere in our five states that we represent. Portland and Seattle ranking 1 and 2 in the areas in which we have to provide services. Before I'm done with my 3 minutes, a child will be kidnapped at the age of 6 right here in Portland. Hopefully not, but it's true. A 14-year-old will be getting off her shift on Stark Street or 82nd that just did 20 Johns. A 15-year-old will be trying to get services and long-term shelter and support services where they can be protected from being pimped back onto the street. And a 30-year-old single mother whose child is a product of a rape while being prostituted will need services and will live a lifetime of nightmares the rest of her life. She will never, ever be able to come out of being victimized. We all have our roles here with Seroptimus International. We've been around since 1921, trying to be the best for women, improving the lives of women and girls in our local communities and throughout the world. We're in 125 countries. Our region, right here in the Pacific Northwest, is the second largest region in our federation of 19 countries behind Japan. We are the largest in this country, and we're here to make a difference and to help. We've partnered with Dan Salzman, Senator Wyden, and many others. We all have our roles. We work very closely and have many great partnerships with the YWCA and Eric Brown, SARC, Janice Youth, amongst many others. Our role here is we're able to produce one of the premier conferences on the west coast of the country for the public. And in this case, we're going in our third year for the Northwest Conference Against Trafficking. It will take place January 14th through the 16th at the Convention Center and the Red Lion right here in downtown Portland. We're encouraging everyone to look beneath the surface, to come out and listen to the speakers. Many of you will be there. We have Daryl Hannah, actress Daryl Hannah. We have Attorney General Rob McKenna. And we have many others like Linda Smith from Shared Hope and Bradley Miles from Polaris Project from Washington, D.C. We would like more people from Portland to join us. Right now we have 17 states represented. We'd like the residents of Portland to come out and learn about how they can eradicate this epidemic in their backyard here in Portland and to look beneath the surface. The website is nwcat.org. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Burt.
Michelle, isn't it also true this is the first time ever Seroptimus have adopted an advocacy position on an issue?
Thank you. Yes, it is. We are a service organization like Rotary or Kiwanis. We've never been able to take on political stances until this past July in San Francisco, where we adopted a resolution on prostitution and human trafficking. And I'm happy to say that we've joined forces with Senator Ron Wyden to try to get the bill passed in the House this week, which we're having a holdup right now to get on the agenda. But we are having a vocal voice on that. Yes, we are. Thank you.
We very much appreciate your advocacy and that of the Seroptimus.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1586?
Request of William Bjornson to address council regarding the recent political psyop targeting the people of City of Portland by the FBI.
Mr. Bjornson?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please forgive me, I'm old, confused.
That's all right. Please have a seat. That clock in front of you, have a seat.
Can I stand, please?
We prefer to have people seated, so if you wouldn't mind taking a seat, that would be great. So that clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
I'm sure it will. Thank you. My name is Bjornson William, Lance Corporal 2021923, United States Marine Corps X. I have a degree in biology from the University of Minnesota, and I study human natural history. I'm very angry. I have come here pretty much involuntarily to ask Mayor Sam Adams and most of the rest of the Portland City Council to never allow themselves to be influenced or intimidated by this direct terroristic attack upon Portland by the neo-SS so-called Homeland Security. In 18 U.S.C. U.S. Code, Section 2331, Paragraph 5, it states, and I quote the term, domestic terrorism means activities that, A, involve acts dangerous to human life that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state, B, appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. This law is a clear indictment of this FBI conspiracy against Portland. Apparently, somewhere in this pseudo-Patriot Act has been added to this law the George Orwell prediction or thoughts to that effect. Mr. Muhammad has been accused of a thought crime that was fully plotted, aided, abetted, and essentially fully carried out by the new SS, specifically the FBI, which to me stands for effing bad idea, fellas, to do it here. To use a Middle Eastern asset skilled in convincing grieving and confused young people to become suicide bombers. To corrupt one of our local young people who, angry as he was, had never expressed any desire to do such a thing here. He was a normal kid, and ask anybody that grew up with him in Beaverton. Oregon has a strong tradition of protecting its young people. How Portland deals with SS-style behavior is up to Portland. But when these monsters choose to abuse our local young people as props in their political machinations, my oath, taken and thoroughly integrated into my being on my 17th birthday, to defend my country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, my oath takes over my being, my heart, and I simply can't tolerate it. It does not take much understanding of human nature or human behavior to understand Mr. Muhammad's outrage. It is the same outrage we saw in the thousands of young Americans who went to Spain in the 1930s when fascism arose there, supported by the Nazis and American corporations. That idealism in our young people was trashed, maybe forever, by the outrageous lies and deceptions and psychopathic horror of World War II and later Vietnam. We see that the feds have set up Mr. Muhammad. The feds have charged Mr. Muhammad with a thought crime. The feds have incarcerated Mr. Muhammad. And now the feds will defend Mr. Muhammad? I think not. How much more of a conflict of interest could any defense attorney have than to be working for the very perpetrators of this betrayal of our youth? Mr. Muhammad is an American, and in spirit, much more American than any of these federal neo-SS monsters. And that's all I have to say on that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, sir. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
We have a couple of housekeeping items.
And if Portland has any morality, they'll get him out of that federal custody and put him into local.
Thank you, sir. Your time's up.
Yes, sir.
We're pulling item number 1605 back to our office.
FBI. Hoover, homophobe.
All right. I hear you. We're pulling back 1605 to my office. Can you please read the title?
1605, grant revocable permit to Portland Saturday Market, Inc. to use parts of Southwest Ankeny and parts of Southwest First for market operations and to close parts of Southwest Ankeny, Southwest NATO Parkway, and Northwest NATO Parkway during certain hours.
Unless there are objections, it's pulled back to my office. 1607 will be heard with a 10 o'clock time certain. And is there any other agenda? And then item number, can you please read the title for item number 1641?
That's 2 o'clock.
Yep.
2 o'clock time.
Yep.
1641, denial of a vacation request for a portion of Southwest Hillsdale Court and a portion of Southwest 43rd Avenue south of Southwest Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway.
This is going to be pulled back to my office as well, unless there are objections. In the last 24 hours, people have actually started talking to each other.
So Mayor?
We'll begin this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Ben has some.
I understand that may be postponed to a date certain.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. It was at one time, I guess, but not now. Okay, so can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for time certain, 9:30 time certain, 1587.
Accept the Education Strategies Report.
So I'm pleased to present this report today on a partnership effort, although it's coming before us, because I want you to know what we've been up to. This has been a partnership with Leaders Roundtable, Portland State University, the Portland Schools Foundation, Portland Public Schools, and all the school districts. And I've got a long, nice long introduction, but I'm not feeling well, so I'm going to turn it over to Coley.
Okay. Hi, City Council. I'm going to give a little bit of context about the work that we've been doing to date. In 2009, the mayor partnered with the county chair to form the Education Cabinet. The Education Cabinet had two primary goals. The first was to increase graduation rates by 50%. The second was to double the number of high school graduates entering post-secondary institutions.
Can you raise that mic up a little bit, please?
Yeah. So the reason for this focus is simple, and I wanted to share some compelling data. We know that approximately one in two inmates that are incarcerated are high school dropouts. We know that students that drop out of school earn on average about $16,000 a year. If they earn an associate's degree, that increases to about $38,000 a year. So having a college degree matters. We also know that if we were to increase by just 1%, the people overall that earn a college degree or some form of post-secondary degree, we stand to yield $6.1 billion in revenue for our region. So there's compelling figures as to why the cabinet decided to focus on these goals. The cabinet is made up of a cross-sector of people from the community. We had parent organizations, the faith community, government, higher ed, and, of course, the K-12 schools. They met quarterly and were advised by a strategy team as well as the Multnomah Youth Commission. The Education Cabinet came up with four primary strategies. The first that you've heard the most about is Summer Youth Connect, so that's improving youth access to jobs and college opportunities over the summertime. Our Future Connect strategy, which is about getting kids into post-secondary, and it includes our Future Connect scholarship. We worked as one strategy was focused on improving our SUN schools at the high school level and leveraging opportunities for young people at high school. And the final one, Community Connect, is really focused on building community supports for young people and giving all young people a caring adult that is knowledgeable and can help them succeed. The outcomes that we've had, we've had a lot of outcomes over this last 2 years. The ones that I wanted to highlight for you are forging about 100 partnerships with private organizations to provide summer opportunities for young people, and increasing our partnerships with colleges and CBOs to provide opportunities for students. We were able to expand parent outreach to East Portland and helped the CPPS folks expand their conference that's focused on high school dropouts and getting kids into graduating from college to more youth from disadvantaged communities. We were able to improve SUN policies as they relate to high school age students. We did the first ever inventory to figure out where are we spending our resources as it relates to dropout prevention and how can we leverage better supports to help those students. And then we were able to map where our youth are and worked with the Bureau of Planning to focus first on where the youth are and then where the youth resources are to really drill down on where the disparities are so that we can target resources to the areas that need them most. So I'm going to leave at that note and turn it on. We're now at a place where we have done good work, but we know that the continuum of supports is something that needs to occur from the moment students are born, essentially, and onward. And so we're going to talk about how this work is transitioning into a cradle-to-career framework.
And Mayor Adams, Commissioners, I'm Carol Smith, Superintendent of Portland Public Schools, but also representing the other school districts that serve the city of Portland. And I'm just here to express how excited we are as superintendents serving the districts that serve Portland's kids about the Cradle to Career framework. And before I get into what I believe that impact is, I just want to say thank you to Mayor Adams and Commissioner Jeff Kogan for their leadership in the convening of the Education Cabinet and the work that the Cabinet did both to make visible the brutal truth, and I'm going to say brutal truth, about the state of graduation rates for our city, and also the investments and the initiatives that have begun to deliver results. So I think that's been really effective as an organizational effort to make visible and start to act. I also want to thank our Leaders Roundtable, who have convened city leaders, elected officials, and the district superintendents over the last 25 years around youth success initiatives, and these have been really pivotal in bringing together the Cradle to Career framework, and also Portland State, who did a lot of the research and underpinnings for the effort, the Cradle to Career effort that's coming forward. And finally, Portland Schools Foundation, who has been a great partner to Portland Public Schools, is now working to expand to serve all the districts and is playing the lead role in operationalizing Cradle to Career. Portland Schools Foundation also was the champion of our Connected by 25 and Ninth Grade Counts initiative, and part of why I want to bring your attention to that is I think it is a key initiative we've taken on as a city to point to a moment in time, so ninth grade, where we believe, looking at our data, students struggle. And if, in fact, we target interventions at ninth grade and students are successful in ninth grade and start 10th grade on track credit-wise, they're five times more likely to graduate. It's been an effort to target the work of the districts in terms of how we're supporting students in ninth grade, as well as galvanize county, city, and local nonprofits to focus our efforts at that moment in time where we can see collective impact of our efforts on our ability to improve the success for students. And I believe that's a great example of what we're looking for with the Cradle to Career framework, of how we align what we're doing as school districts with what we're doing as service providers from a time a young person is born until they enter the workforce. So Cradle to Career. And I think that's the hope we have, and particularly in a moment of declining resource. What we've got is our ability to align and focus and make more powerful the resources we have, and I think this framework is exactly what that's going to do for us. So I'm very hopeful. We're really excited, and just thank you for the efforts and your leadership in making it happen.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to thank you. You're doing fantastic work, Superintendent, but I especially, as it relates to this and being able to move forward as a county collection of school districts, want to underscore my thanks for your willingness to bring about a team effort countywide among all the school districts to allow this kind of work to happen. I've been around a long time, worked a long time with a variety of different people on this issue, and your superintendency by far is the most collaborative with other districts, so thank you.
Thank you for that. And I'm just going to say we've enjoyed the collaboration as school district leaders. It's been very powerful, and we intend to continue beyond each of our individual superintendencies. So as we've had turnover, the structures we've been building are strong, and the collaboration continues. So we're excited about that.
Mr. Scott.
Hi, I'm Bill Scott. I'm here before you today as the chair of the Leaders Roundtable. Roundtable has been around since the early 1980s when it was founded by Mayor Bud Clark and the county and the Portland School District and Roger Breasley, who was then CEO of U.S. Bank, on behalf of the then Chamber of Commerce, now Portland Business Alliance, to essentially try to focus the leaders of the city and subsequently the county as we expanded our vision on the challenges of having all our children grow up to be productive, self-sufficient citizens with good educations. The roundtable over that whole time, I think, has built a network of relationships and a common vision for how we see things and what the problems are and what the solutions are that has allowed a lot of other things to happen. But most of us who have been involved, and I've been involved pretty much that whole time, have always been frustrated that we couldn't find a way to implement and get more action going on a more concerted, you know, basis on an ongoing way. And in the last couple of years, things have come together in a way that I think now makes that possible for the first time, which has been a dream for a lot of us. The catalyst for the Cradle to Career, per se, was really Portland State University and President Vivo and the Coalition of Urban Cities Serving Universities, which began to look at a model that had been created in Cincinnati called STRIVE, that essentially started out as a framework to measure everything that was going on in the Cincinnati area in terms of the outcomes for kids. we picked up on it through a grant that Portland State had kind of engineered that came to the Leaders Roundtable. We worked with Portland State to begin an effort that would builds a similar framework for Multnomah County, and that would show us a set of measurements of how we're doing that would be adopted and used by all the school districts, all the child-serving agencies in the state for both kind of social service health factors as well as educational outcomes. There was recently a kickoff at Portland State of the first report of that group, Cradle to Career, and if you haven't read it, I would really urge you to do so. And it's not the first report we ever had about how things are going, but I think it's the first one that really had the commitment of all the significant players behind it to join in a single framework for how they're going to do things. From the beginning of that effort, we understood that if we were going to make something out of it, we had to create an implementing mechanism that was different than what we'd been struggling with for all these years. And in a lot of ways, Mayor Adams and Chair Wheeler initially had shown the way with the education cabinet that there was a way to get more action going, as well as just share and relate and get to know each other so that we could do things together. And as a result of prodding really from the mayor, a bunch of us started a series of meetings last spring, said, how are we going to do this when we're done? Because if we just produce this report and don't have something new to really make its strategies real and to come out somewhere, we won't be anywhere. And thank goodness those meetings, which sometimes were frustrating, but they actually have resulted in something which is quite amazing at this point, where we have two organizations going out of business and everybody in Multnomah County agreeing on who and how we're going to implement our strategies. The Cradle to Career is really identified as a framework. It's not a new program. It's not a new initiative. The whole point of it is to align all the stuff we're already doing and set priorities among the stuff that we would really like all the funders and all the people with resources to get behind so that we can focus in very concentrated fashion on the points of highest leverage that can make the biggest difference in the graduation rate and the success of our kids. So it's the whole idea is it's not another meeting. We're actually reducing the number of meetings everybody needs to go to and hopefully increasing the amount of time they'll have to make something come out the other end with some action. So that's really what the idea of Cradle to Career is really a concerted effort by all the agencies and actors that are affecting children and families in the county. I think in addition to Portland State and the mayor and the chair and the superintendents, I think some other key actors in the process. Particularly, I would single out Sandy McDonough and the Portland Business Alliance, which has made a lot of really moved things along. This is an immensely appealing initiative to the business community because it helps make sense out of everything that's going on. And I was really struck at the Oregon Business Leadership Summit Monday, where the two things that were highlighted, besides a series of initiatives in the job, immediate job creation area, were a bunch of initiatives on how important it is to reinvent our service delivery systems in government because we can't afford to do it the way we've been doing it. And I think it's really exciting that the city of Portland and Multnomah County and all our school districts and our social service agencies have made the commitment to go in a new direction and essentially have all coalesced around a reinvented Portland Schools Foundation as the single orchestrator, I guess you will, or conductor of the orchestra to help focus us all on what we're doing. I also serve as the co-chair of the Sun Coordinating Council for the Sun Community School and Sun Service System, and I think all the people in our council are very excited because we think that our vision of a kind of a unified way of delivering service to children and youth can be greatly accelerated because of Cradle to Career. And so I just hope that you will all pay attention and get involved and support Mayor Adams in his leadership on an ongoing basis. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Scott, this would not have happened without your voluminous volunteer hours devoted to keeping communications going and co-chairing the change effort. And I just want you to know, I don't know if people know that Mr. Scott was on the school board a number of years ago and was chief of staff to a previous mayor and other illustrious titles. And so you are the perfect person to help see this through. And I just want you to know how much we thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from the chair of the board of the Portland Schools Foundation and the president and CEO of the foundation, which is undergoing a rebirth, as you've heard. Welcome.
Welcome. Hello, City Council. I'm speaking to you today as the immediate past chair of the Portland Schools Foundation, one of the hats I wear. But I'm also here to talk to you as a business leader in this community that has been very, very concerned and very, very noted the importance of seeing an educated workforce and seeing our kids through to Cradle to Career. In my position as Chief Operating Officer of the Blazers, we have, over the years, been approached by countless well-meaning organizations throughout the city, all having similar concerns on behalf of our kids, all very, very well-meaning. And I would say, as a business leader, it becomes confusing at times to know exactly where resources ought to be placed. And we have remarked in many of the circles and many of the tables that have been spoken to today that if there could be a collaborative effort where all of those that have these interests could come together and better focus efforts, better focus resources, better look at similar data, look at similar outcomes, have unified goals, that we could accomplish so much more in Portland. What is so special and unique about our community is that there are so many constituents, both private constituents, parents, service providers, our governments. We don't lack as a community for caring in this area. And what's wonderful about the number of meetings that Bill has alluded to is that we also don't lack for energy to collaborate in Portland. And what is unique and special and wonderful about this moment in time is that I feel more than ever the community is really coming together and coalescing around this issue. Now let me speak just a bit about Portland Schools Foundation. We've spent the last 2 years working as an organization in this, focusing primarily on Portland Public Schools District, but realizing that as poverty has moved, that a focus that's specific to Portland alone does not make sense, and that in order to serve our kids of greatest need, we've got to follow where the need is the most greatest, which is expanding throughout the entire Multnomah County and even beyond. So our organization spent a lot of time realizing how large of an initiative that is to take on, to look at serving all the kids in all the county. But I speak for our board in saying that there is no other option. And part of what we've done over the last year is also work on our board makeup, because we believe that as an organization, in order to continue to keep our eyes on the prize and realize where we are, that our board focus and our board complexity needs to mirror that complexity of the children that are in Portland schools that are in the greatest need of help. Then we spent a lot of time just looking at our overall operation and making sure that our operation is organized in such a way that we're going to be ready to meet the challenge. And, you know, Dan, I think, will speak some more to the Portland Schools Foundation and where we are as an organization. But we're very proud of the work that we've done. We're proud that we got to the place of realizing that what needed to happen is that there needed to be collaboration. No one organization is going to provide the single sole solution to the issue in education. The only way that this community is going to be successful in addressing this issue and attacking this abysmal graduation rate is that if all of us that are concerned and care about this organization are looking at this problem, are looking at the same data, looking at the same kids, understanding the interventions that really do make a difference, and then activating on that. And today, the Portland Schools Foundation has been given the nod by the community in a very, very interesting way to take on the work of convening the community around this issue. We appreciate that it is a very, very large challenge, and we appreciate that we won't have it right at the first, and we appreciate that the collaboration that has already begun will need to continue. But we're very excited. We think this is a very exciting moment in time for our kids, for us to do something very special. And then I would send it to Dan.
Well, you were part of the informal group that got together to help design, cajole, charm, and prod these changes, which to the average citizen might sound modest. But if anyone has tried to merge three organizations and then change the scope of geographic scope of what we feel we are collectively responsible for, you would know how hard it is, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Sam, for your work.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. It's great to be here. It's actually an honor, and it's also humbling to be the CEO of an organization that has said yes. I remember when Mayor Adams came up to me at one of those meetings early on and said, Dan, you guys are ready to take this on, right? And then I looked at Sarah. Sarah says, yeah, we can do this. And that was the early stage of bringing ourselves along internally, because we know that this is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do because Portland needs to play to its strengths. And its strengths right now are that we have system alignment with its leadership. We have a mayor and a county chair that are on board for this and have been, no matter who was in the county chair's position. And that's important to remember, that there's a role that we're playing here. It's not about personalities, it's about principles. We have superintendents that are in their role and in their proper lane, and they're coming together to work as a collaborative team. And we have university presidents, and that's plural, led by Vim Vivelle, but all of our independent colleges and our community colleges are at the table. So that's exciting when you can have all of these strong leaders, who also, of course, have strong personalities, they wouldn't be leaders, coming together to know that it's the principal thing to do. To look at system alignment and to do something different than we have in the past is a huge undertaking. It's very difficult to understand at first. Please know that everybody that's had to listen to presentations on Cradle to Career scratches their head and wonders what we're really talking about. So know that there'll be a process of understanding this, and knowing that we can't do business as usual. At the gathering on Monday at the convention center, that was the theme. We can't do business as usual. That's easy to say, but it's very difficult to do. The kids need adults to actually behave differently, not just to keep not saying the same things. Because kids are smart. They can see when adults are actually sincere about their behaviors. So we're also just thrilled that there is this alignment in Portland at this time and in Multnomah County to work together to do something that's game-changing. As an organization, I'll be real brief, but we have to do a radical renovation. But our foundation is not changing at all. We've always been about equity. The Portland parents knew 16 years ago that just because their neighborhood had some resources, they cared about all the kids in the district because they chose public schools. So they agreed as a community to reinvest one-third of their monies into those neighborhoods that do not have those same resources. That's a foundation of the Portland Schools Foundation, but it's the heart of what makes Portland special. As we move forward with this, it's under that same spirit of equity. We can't continue to fail those kids that predominantly are of color and are in poverty that aren't graduating at 60%, which is already sobering and embarrassing, but often half that number below 50% with most of those categories. You've all heard the statistics. You've all listened to the compelling data, whether it's from the Communities of Coalition of Color, whether it's from sponsored by Chalkboard for Black Parents Initiative, also the looking at the statewide data on the Latino community. It has to start early, because what we see with all of that data is that at kindergarten and first grade, they're at least 10 yards behind. And the good work of the teachers and the principals and the schools can't eliminate that gap. And so Mayor Adams was right to look at the agenda, the platform, if you will, of lowering the graduation rate has to be a cradle-to-career initiative. And so I applaud his leadership for expanding the way that we can look at this during your time. You're setting up a great foundation for us. It was important for us as a board and as a staff to continue to deepen the relationships beyond Portland Public Schools. And Carol Smith deserves a lot of credit, because a lot of leaders wouldn't say that I'll share this nonprofit that's traditionally been just a partner with us. She has taken a lot of courage for her and a lot of trust, and it also just shows that she's always about the kids. So I wanted to just acknowledge that she was quite humble in her remarks, but it was quite a testimony when she looked at us and said, no, it's the right thing to do to work with all of the school districts. Our organizational plan is changing because of that, but it didn't just happen today. It happened actually with working with you as a partner. This has always been a private and public investment. Ninth grade counts, an investment that has been private and public, is something that you all got behind early on. And after the Connected by 25 research came out, which Superintendent Smith spoke to, we wanted to do something. And actually what needed to happen is to do something different. And that is take the private partners that work with the kids, those who work with the kids after school, on the weekends and in the summers, and get them at the same table with the educators. Everyone's overburdened in their silos. You have to break out of those silos and have a conversation about the kid. That's the whole child that we talk about. And many of our kids, I don't worry about any of your children. I know that you'd all be great parents. But the fact is, many kids are born into families that don't have that type of parenting. And those are the kids we're talking about. And they represent many, many of our children. So if you can't get behind this from just the moral imperative, it's really an economic issue. It's we can't continue to have less than 50% of our kids not be career ready. It's one thing to get the diploma, but how many of those with a high school diploma are actually career ready? And all of you know that being career ready today is different than being career ready 30 years ago. Our manufacturing jobs need the same type of mathematics aptitude that you need to not take remedial courses in a community college. See, all of these things are connected. It's about connecting the dots. And if the school's foundation is learning to do something well, it's about setting the table with the right people at that table and having courageous convening, making sure that we get people there and they get rid of their own siloed agenda and they figure out what they are doing and sharing it with others so it can actually have a bigger impact. Back to ninth grade counts, we keep hearing stories of how just being at that table has improved the practices of those organizations. For example, we have some of the same kids that need investments over the summer. Portland Public Schools puts on this great 8th and 9th grade academy, the Transition Academy, that goes from June into mid-July. Well, another nonprofit has a step up from Open Meadow, has a program that is a camp that goes into August. So they get together and make sure that their calendar is adjusted so that same kid can actually be engaged in something relevant and rigorous for almost the entire summer. That's game-changing. All it did was them being at the same table and noticing that their calendars can be adjusted. It's noticing that with the investment of AmeriCorps volunteers, that they can actually go into the homes of the parents that sometimes just don't have the bandwidth or the wherewithal to fill out those forms. Maybe it's an English language learner issue. Maybe it's the fact that they just are tired because they're working three jobs. But many times we don't reach the kids because we don't have the parent support to or the bandwidth to actually fill out the forms to get them engaged in the summer program. What can we do differently? Well, let's have the AmeriCorps volunteers literally go through the neighborhood and knock on doors and have conversations with these parents and let them know that their kids are going to be safe and they're going to have a wonderful, enriching experience if they're involved in this step-up program. I give you just a couple examples because this is how it's going to work. It's going to get sincere, well-meaning adults that are doing compelling hard work to actually be at the same table and to listen to each other and figure out how that private nonprofit can partner with that public school system and play to their strengths and do something different, not do business as usual. The state of Oregon is going to be talking about this. I'm excited that in the city of Portland and in Multnomah County, we have an opportunity with this private and public investment to take the lead and provide a pilot project of how we can do business, not as usual, but actually make it game-changing for the kids of the city of Portland. So I'm just trying to wrap up and not repeat everything that was said already, but I know that I'm sitting in front of five curious, insightful individuals, and so if there's any time for questions, then I want to make sure that you have that. So we're excited as an organization. We'll be keeping you informed about how our organization, our business plan, and our communication plan evolves, but just know that we've signed up because we're ready to actualize our mission to make it relevant today in your 2010, 2011, and going forward. As any nonprofit, you have to continue to figure out how to be agile and continue to be relevant for what's necessary in the marketplace. And so we're ready to step up and do that. It's an honor to be here this morning.
That was a great presentation. The allusion to radical renovation, could you elaborate on that? And let me make sure I understand. So the foundation will now be serving all school districts in Multnomah County? That's okay. Is that the radical renovation, or are there other radical renovations that were coming or have happened?
Well, I did say radical renovation. You just gave it back to me. Okay. It is radical to actually take your geographic scope and expand it. Mm-hmm. It is also radical to say that it's time for us to look at a child's life from cradle to career and know that we're going to be committed for that entire life cycle. It is radical to say that we can't continue to just know that it's okay to invest in isolated practices that are great, don't get me wrong, but how can we come together to make a collective impact? And how can we even begin to do that unless we actually set the tables up and have those conversations?
It's really radical common sense.
It's radical common sense.
Has up till this point escaped us, but won't any longer.
The other thing I was wondering about, the foster kids in foster care, I mean, they have education rates or graduation rates that pale in comparison to the African-American graduation rate, the Native American graduation rate. Fewer than 3% go on to any kind of higher education. So who speaks for them in this process?
Who are the voices that
talk about the special needs and attention that children in foster care often need?
I think the thing that's also, you could say, radical about what this initiative will do is it will allow us to focus on the kids as individuals and to know who those kids are and to be able to follow those kids, because you're absolutely right to think about foster kids. In the past, these kids could have moved from one district to another. There may have been some successes that could have been started with one particular school district or a teacher or a counselor, and then that student, by virtue of what they're going through, has to move to a different district, to a different teacher, to a different counselor. And what happened before is that we lost track of who those children were and what their particular issues were. And what's radical about what we're doing now is that we'll be able to know about every child, be able to have information and be able to follow them as they cross district boundaries, as they sometimes cross school boundaries, and do a better job of, as Dan has indicated before, tracking them down and finding out exactly what partnership will make the most sense for them as they face the challenges that they go through. So not just not just foster kids, but kids that are suffering huge poverty issues, homelessness issues, language issues, special needs issues, all of those challenges have a better opportunity to be addressed. And not just at that ninth grade transition, which is where we're seeing some really great traction now, but also, as Dan has indicated, at the early stage, prior to even entering school, we'll be able to identify these kids and follow them along the continuum and hopefully best identify where it is that they're going to need service and better partner them up with those private organizations that are already in place to do that.
Do you have representation in your group of somebody from Multnomah County Department of Human Services or a group like Juvenile Rights Projects that advocate?
Yes, we're building these networks. But having these conversations is what matters right now. So I wrote down foster kids, making sure that we have a voice at the table that convenes, especially in the appropriate years during the continuum where that's necessary. I know you have the visual in front of you. We'll work on making it a little more visually appealing and easier to understand. But the big, what I'd like to point out about that visual, is it on your screen or is it just on this laptop here? Oh, it is now? Okay, great. Oh, it's up there too. There's academic indicators below and student support indicators. Student support indicators below and academic indicators above. And what I'm trying to point out here is that it's the education leaders that will be on the top part, and then in the bottom part you have the private nonprofit workers and organizations. And what we have are milestones. Superintendent Smith and the other superintendents in the county talk about ready to learn at third grade, at kindergarten, reading proficiency at third grade, mentorship is always in there as it should be, eighth and ninth grade transition, and then being career and college ready. And there'll be others that will be determined. And at each level have key strategies, not tons of strategies, but really drill down one or three at each level so we can drill down deep as opposed to scattering all our resources elsewhere. So I do believe this is going to help public and private investors focus their energies on doing a few things really well, which I think usually research indicates, and everything will be based on research and evidence-based practices at each level. So I want you to know that this is a movement, but this movement has a lot of structure.
So what I would just put a punctuation point on that is and members of committees with the county that, among other things, focuses on the issue that you raised. That group includes overlap, but also with the education agenda, but also has a separate agenda. This will sort of figuratively tie that all together, and it'll take time, and you're going to be part of it. Thank you very much. And Dan, thank you for taking on, as the CEO, thank you for taking on this rebirth. Really, really appreciate it.
Actually, I had a question for Carol,
yep.
If I could.
Carol Smith. Commissioner Leonard has a question for you.
Thank you, Carol.
Yes.
I really appreciate the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
You really stand out. It's wonderful for the school district. How many music programs have we had to eliminate?
Oh, man. You know, and it depends on what time period we're talking. We're keeping track of literally trying to have enough periods of music. So we actually look at enrichments and having music enrichments, and we're talking three periods a week at elementary school at this point, and we're struggling to hang on to what we have.
Is it the case that I was under the impression that some high schools had actually eliminated music?
So at high school, we've defined some music and in a broad sense as part of our core program and part of what we just did with identifying a threshold number of students at the high school level that allows us to offer a core program that we've now gone from 9 community comprehensives to 7, and we've identified music, and again, what type of music is going to vary high school to high school, but music as one of the elements of core program that we're working to hang on to.
So each school has some music
and
program.
Yes, I mean, and that's what we're working to build as we go forward, so we're not actually at implementation yet.
Not enough.
How about?
We don't have enough. Can I tell you what? This is one of the things that
we are trying to get to. What programs have we had to eliminate that we'd like to offer beyond music? Shop?
Okay, so yes, I'm in a career technical education. We are at